Hi, it's Jim Bakei. My podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. I'm going to talk about a bunch of different things today because I've got a whole bunch of thoughts and I really haven't been able to string a single theme through it. But the kinds of things that I think that maybe everybody's had issues with, and I was just talking to my producer because I'm in the process of wanting to put my book, True Fit, on audio. You know, so it's been an interesting process. And for those of you that know me won't be surprised, but those of you that don't, I'm not particularly technically oriented. I'm not very good at making decisions on things that I don't have a strong sense of knowledge of. And as I did more and more of the research, I just kept getting more and more confused about which direction I should go. And this morning, I finally turned to Katie. I said, okay, well, we have all the information. So now just tell me what we should do and let's get on with it. There's lots of work written about more alternatives make it more difficult to come to a conclusion on one. So I ask you, you know, do you find yourself sometimes going a little too far and saying, okay, I've got alternative A, B, and C regarding something I want to do in work or something I want to do in life, and then find yourself going, well, is there an alternative D and E? And think to yourself that, you know, the more alternatives, the better informed I'll be to make a good decision. Well, my experience has been the more alternatives, the more confusing it gets. And I understand the concept of everybody wanting to sort of look at something from every different angle, turn it over upside down and everything else. But sometimes when faced with one or two alternatives, things happen in a much better fashion. And maybe the best example of that is when you think about what happened in this COVID pandemic experience, people had no alternatives. Zero. It was move quickly. There was no time for alternatives. There was no time for discussion. And I find it quite remarkable that in moments like that, you know, I often say to one of my clients, you know, you do crisis really well. It's the regular day-to-day stuff that you suck at. And the reason is you overanalyze the day-to-day stuff. And there are myriads of implications that you run down and chase down and in many cases, talk you out of making the decision. Or even worse is delaying the decision that has to be made. I think people have that natural tendency, not everybody, but large parts of things, they don't like to make the decision, right? People don't like to feel like, well, if I make that decision and I'm wrong, that's one thing. But if I don't make that decision and I'm wrong, then it's really, I didn't really make a decision. I didn't really choose to go that way. I just chose not to go either way. But the reality is they're both wrong. By the way, it's okay to be wrong, because if you make decision, like my email says at the bottom, indecision is a killer. When people are forced to make a decision, how quickly it turns out to be the right decision and how they mobilize and how they bring all of their energy and everyone works together around that decision. But what happens very, very quickly is as a result of making that decision, you quickly realize we have to adjust. You know, we have to change our course by 3 or 4 degrees, or hold it, what we learned didn't actually help us. It's made our situation worse. Or what we learned is, holy macro, we're just not in enough. We should be pushing the pedal down on the gas because this is really the right way to go. So I find that applies to so many aspects of life. And one in particular, as I said to Katie this morning, when I do my podcast every week, I decide on what the subject matter will be and what I think is relevant at the time and what I think will be helpful to people. But what I've come to realize is sometimes a podcast, I think this is going to be really good. This is really going to hit the nail on the head. This is really going to resonate with people. Doesn't. And other ones, like the one last week about online job hunting, I mean, I was stunned at the amount of emails that I got from people. It's about sort of taking stock of yourself and asking yourself the question, what decisions do I need to make? What decisions am I avoiding? What decisions do I just say, I'm going to make this decision. I'm going to apply to that company. I'm going to talk to my boss. I'm going to deal with that coworker. I'm going to do all of these things, because we are paralyzed in our decision-making by fear of making the wrong decision. But what I want to say to you today is there is no wrong decision, because every decision teaches you something. And so for the first part, I want you to think about it. Don't have more alternatives, create less alternatives. Ask yourself the question, if I only had one alternative to make this decision, what would it be? And sometimes out of that discussion with yourself comes this little nugget of gold that creates the opportunity. Think about how quickly the world adjusted. Think about how it all happened. There was no time. There was no time to discuss. There was no time to think about it. There was no time to think about alternatives. There was only time for action. And we need to act. It's that call to action. It's that call to action. It's what I've talked about. So one of the other things that sort of more recently came about is I was with one of my clients and we were talking about a recent survey, or I don't know, it was a conference or what it was. And they talked about what capacity of work are people doing at home? How much is being utilized of their capacity? The general feeling amongst the senior leadership people from all kinds of organizations is that their employees were only working at 60% capacity. You know, it's interesting because I always like to flip the coin, right? When someone says 60% capacity, and my client said to me, you see, that's not very much. I said, well, hang on a second. I said, if you look at it through that lens, it may not be very much. But the question I would ask is 60% of capacity at home equal to the real capacity at work? Because the fact of the matter is, at work, they're not working at 100% of capacity in their jobs because they're taking lunches. They're going to a multitude of useless meetings where, you know, I always joke about the meetings and it's the same 20 people. And you say to the person next to you, where are you going? He goes, oh, I'm going to this meeting. Oh, I'm going to that meeting too. And it's meeting after meeting after meeting. Somehow this world of work at home has reduced the number of meetings that people have by probably 30 to 40% and made the meeting times far more relevant and far more productive. So then the question that comes from that is, if there's no drop in production and there's no drop in business, then is the world really running at 60%? Even if it's at the office or even if it's at home? And lead to the next question is if we're running at 60%, then do we have too many people? Not a good conclusion for most people, but the reality is probably yes. And the reality is probably what we're facing, not as a result of the pandemic, but as a result of what the pandemic has identified, is that most organizations were fat and bloated. Most organizations never really understood how many people they actually need to have the place running. And the number is probably far less than what they have. I mean, more recently, you're starting to see, you know, Disney let go 28,000 people. United Airlines let go 32,000 people. They just don't need the capacity. And I bet you, even if things go back to the way they were, which for those of you that have been listening to me, know that I do not believe that's the case. I do believe that things are going to get far worse and that the world will look completely different than it does today. And this move up the curve using technology, this move up the curve to people working from home will only continue to get compounded as organizations realize they don't need as many people to run the business as they do. That's not good news for the general population. And that's not good news for our budgets and our deficits and all kinds of things like that. But it means that we all need to think well ahead of the curve. If I'm going to lose that job, if I'm going to be part of that percentage of people that are going to lose their job, what can I retrain myself? What skills do I have that I can look in alternative worlds? and how do I think differently? It also means the governments are going to have to think about long-term unemployment, the social fabric of a country. And I can't believe it, but I do believe its time has come, is where people get paid to stay home. But I think we're at the beginnings of starting to see the tail end of the benefits programs that the government's put on. They haven't started the next wave of them. So at the top of the show, as we always do, my producer Katie and I were talking about the different things that we're going to talk about. And she wondered whether there was some sort of discrepancy. You know, is that really that people are working at 60% capacity? Or, you know, are some people working at 120% while their coworkers are working at 10% and maybe kind of riding the system, milking the system? Maybe that average isn't realistic, is what she's asking. So here are my thoughts on that. So the people that are working at 120% of capacity, you may feel like you're working at 100%, 20% of capacity, but in reality, if you think about the capacity, that the window that you were working in, then you're probably working about the same amount of time as you were before. And I don't mean necessarily just by hour, but if you think about, you know, you don't get up, you don't spend half an hour getting ready in the shower, getting dressed. You don't get in your car on the subway, you get there, right? When I talk to people, obviously at senior levels, like the most senior people, those people are working 24/7. But I think they were working 24/7 before. I think what's changed is the delineation of the line, right? What's happened is that people have lost the definition of the day, right? The day is when I walk in the office, and the day is when I walk out of the office for the general population, right? Now, there is no line of delineation that I start work at this time, and with no boundaries on when the day starts or when the day ends, there is a feeling of like, oh my God, I'm working 24 hours a day. But I think part of that's because we had that delineation, you know, this is work and this is home time. And now our day has become a little more flexible, more sort of unstructured. And then we have meetings and we have those types of things. We're actually in complete control of our time, probably more than we were before. So when you think about, am I working at 60% capacity? Am I working at 70 or 80% capacity? Think about the capacity, and maybe capacity is the wrong word, but think about if I was to consider my workday as starting from the moment I got up to the moment I got home, how many hours a day is that? And of that day, how many hours in that day are you actually working? Like really, really working? And I think you'd be surprised. I think it wouldn't be as much as most people think. So something to think about. So one of the other subjects that I wanted to touch on is how everything that we're going through creates a whole set of consequences that no one is able to actually have seen in advance. I read an interesting article the other day, and it was talking about employee and employer relations as it relates to COVID and as it relates to knowing things. I spent some time talking to some people that I know in the legal profession, and it was actually quite fascinating because they were saying that what they're starting to see is, if, you know, I tell my employer that I have COVID, is my employer then responsible to make sure that all of my coworkers, am I responsible to make sure that all of my coworkers are aware that I have tested positively? What's the legal ramifications? And the reality is that there's not much precedence around that. I mean, I can't imagine it would be the same issues if you had cancer, you had MS or something else like that. So one of the other questions that sort of has arisen from this legal is, what if I don't want to go back to work? What if my company says, we're bringing you back, and you say, you know what, I'm not comfortable? And I had one of these situations just recently, somebody was telling me about, and they were trying to get people to come back to the office, and they said no. Well, what happens then? What's the legal responsibility? I mean, can you force someone to come back to the office that is concerned about their health? If you do, what are the ramifications legally if they get sick? Now, I'm not a lawyer, but the purpose of me using these examples is that every single day, something new is happening that we couldn't have anticipated. And what we need to be is we need to be open-minded and we need to be resilient. And we need to ensure that we are reading as much as we can, obviously being safe, wearing masks, unlike those people that were on Yonge Street last week protesting against not wearing masks, which is beyond anything that I could even imagine. But from a personal perspective, we need to stay resilient. We need to stay open-minded. And the open-minded part, you know, staying resilient is probably easier than being open-minded, but being open-minded is really important. It's really important for your state of mind. It's really important for be able to see opportunities that are coming in the future. And it's really important to see and react to the things that are going to be positively affecting you or negatively affecting you. So I'm sorry for a bit of a ramble. I had a whole bunch of subjects I wanted to talk about today. I guess my last theme is stay safe, stay as positive as you can, and work hard, be productive, but keep your eyes wide open because the world is going to continue to change at an extremely rapid rate. I'm Jim Bakiai. The podcast is Be You. The World Will Adjust.